Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're the place where we look at the strategies, the culture behind successful businesses. We use the source materials you give us, trying to find those, you know, key takeaways you can use. Today, our mission is really focused on niche franchising. Like, how do you actually build a high-performing service business right from the beginning?
Yeah, and our source today is this really detailed piece from the Better Business Bureau. It's dated September 24th, 2025, and it's all about Precision Garage Door of Maine. Specifically, it's co-owner and COO John Russell. We're digging into their strategic choices, you know, operations, culture, what makes their specific model tick. And the thing that grabs you right away is, well, Russell's own story. It's not like he came out of some fancy MBA program or anything. He says he got into garage doors because his uncle literally snatched him off the couch one day. Pulled him into it when he's really young.
Yeah, it sounds super informal, doesn't it? Like an accidental start.
Totally. Less career planning, more like, hey, come do this. But, you know, that foundation, it turned strategic pretty fast. He actually joined the Maine Precision Garage Door Service franchise, the bigger one, way back in 2001. And they didn't just hire him as like another tech, no. They brought him in specifically because they wanted to get into commercial work.
Okay. So a new market for them.
Completely new. They had basically zero presence there at the time. They needed Russell, specifically, to build that whole side of the business for them.
Wow. So he's learning the ropes hands-on, but also learning strategy by building something totally new for a national brand.
Exactly. He wasn't just inheriting a process. He had to create it. And I think that experience, you know, building from scratch, it probably informs how hands-on he is now.
Okay, right. So let's jump forward then. February 2025, Russell and his partners launched Precision Garage Door of Maine. And the first, like, really big strategic call they make is choosing their territory. Now, usually you'd think service business, you want density, right? Like a big city where techs can hit lots of houses easily.
Right. San Antonio, Atlanta, somewhere packed.
But they did the exact opposite.
They did. They picked the entire state of Maine. And Russell told the BBB straight up, they chose the whole state because it's, quote, sparsely populated.
Okay, hang on. Why? That seems backwards for efficiency.
Well, here's the key bit. They actually needed that huge geographic area and the total population spread across it just to meet the franchise requirements. The volume thresholds to open a territory were pretty strict.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so the sparse population wasn't the goal. It was a condition they had to accept to get a large enough potential customer base to even be allowed to open.
Precisely. It was driven by the franchise rules and likely less competition across such a wide area. Maybe if it were denser, they wouldn't have been granted the whole state.
Got it. So they're betting that this massive low-density area with maybe fewer strong competitors is better than a small packed market where everyone's fighting over the same customers.
Yeah, that seems to be the calculus. But talk about a logistical challenge.
Right? Seriously. You've got the COO, Russell, based mostly in Memphis, Tennessee. That's like, what, 1,300 miles away?
Yep. And he's overseeing operations across thousands of square miles up in Maine.
The source mentions he likes the coast, likes the people, which is nice, but... How do you manage inventory? Scheduling. Technicians driving all over 35,000 square miles and still make money.
That's where I think that earlier commercial experience probably comes in handy. They must be relying heavily on, like, decentralized operations.
Meaning?
Well, commercial jobs often mean special schedules, longer travel, handling big, awkward parts that aren't just sitting in one warehouse. So they probably took those principles, the ones needed for complex, remote commercial logistics, maybe things like regional part stashes or something, and applied them to this huge residential area.
Okay, so pre-positioning inventory, maybe. Smart routing.
Has to be something like that. It's really the only way a COO in Memphis can effectively run day-to-day operations across all of Maine. Makes that distance manageable, maybe even efficient in their system.
Okay, let's shift to the actual service they provide. You mentioned the commercial background, but the source says most of their day-to-day is residential repairs.
Correct. It's the bread and butter. Broken springs, worn-out cables, damaged panels, rollers, openers, you know, the usual suspects.
High frequency stuff.
Exactly. And that's crucial. Those repairs, especially springs, happen often, and people need them fixed fast. It's high volume work, probably decent margins too. That's the steady income stream, the foundation that lets them fund the more ambitious things.
Like their new door installation process. This is where it gets really interesting, I think. When someone's thinking about a whole new door, the tech doesn't just bring a brochure. They bring a, quote, mobile showroom.
Yeah, think about that. They actually put a showroom set up in the truck and bring it right to your house.
What's in it?
Well, working garage door openers for one, so
Oh.
you can actually hear them run right there next to your garage and judge, how loud it is or how quiet it is. Plus color samples, material samples, and even a design screen so you can visualize what the final door will look like on your actual house.
Okay, that cuts out a lot of guesswork for the customer.
Totally. And think about the business side. What's the ROI on putting that showroom in a truck?
Well, you tackle the biggest hurdles in selling a big ticket item like a garage door, right? Uncertainty about the look, the sound, the function.
And the need for maybe a second visit, a consultation back at a physical showroom. This way, you can potentially close the deal right then and there.
Faster sales cycle, less chance of the customer changing their mind, saves the cost of another trip out. It basically turns the technician into a consultant on the spot.
Exactly. And this real intense focus on the customer experience, it doesn't just stop at the sale. It flows right into how they handle retention and, maybe more importantly, service recovery.
Right, and this is where John Russell's personal involvement seems, well, kind of extreme for a COO. He's still managing the quality feedback directly.
He is. The policy is very specific. Anytime they get a customer review that is lower than 4 stars, Russell himself calls the customer.
The COO, personally, not a manager, not a customer service lead.
Nope. John Russell picks up the phone.
Wow. Okay, we just talked about him managing this huge territory from Memphis. How is that even possible? Doesn't that take up a ton of his time? Seems like it wouldn't scale.
It definitely challenges, traditional ideas about where a COO should spend their time. But Russell defends it. He doesn't see it as just like a nice customer service touch. He views anything less than 4 stars as a fundamental failure. His quote is, "Because that means we failed you."
So it's a core operational checkpoint for him, not just PR.
I think so. And let's connect it back to Maine. Remember, sparse population, potentially close-knit communities?
Yeah.
Well, in places like that, word of mouth is huge.
Yeah.
Right. One really unhappy customer telling their neighbors could do way more damage than in a big anonymous city.
Ah, okay. So the cost of Russell spending, say, 15, 20 minutes on a call to fix a problem and maybe turn a 3-star into a loyal customer.
Yes, it's probably way lower than the cost of negative buzz spreading through that community. Plus, it keeps them plugged in directly
Yeah.
to any breakdowns in their service, which has got to be vital when your team is so spread out.
That makes sense. That level of personal accountability from the top, though, it must trickle down. You can't have that kind of high-touch customer recovery without a similar focus internally on the employees. So how do they attract and keep good people, especially younger folks, in a skilled trade? It's competitive out there.
Yeah, and Russell seems to get the shift in worker priorities. He specifically mentioned that for many employees today, they're not live to work, they're work to live.
Meaning flexibility and growth matter more than just the paycheck.
Exactly.
Right.
They want to see a path forward. They want work that fits into their life, not the other way around. If you don't offer that, especially flexibility and clear opportunities, they'll leave.
Okay, so how do they actually screen for people who will thrive in that kind of environment? They need people who are driven but also fit their model.
Well, it comes down to a really specific step in the hiring process. Russell believes younger workers, especially, need to see a clear plan. How do I get good at this job? How do I move up? So the hiring managers are looking for candidates who already think that way, who have their own sense of direction.
And how do they test that?
It's pretty direct. During the interview, candidates have to write down 3 personal goals.
Personal goals, like not just job goals.
Right, personal goals. Could be anything, getting a certification, sure, but also maybe finishing a degree, saving for a house, running a marathon, whatever. 3 things they personally want to achieve.
And if they can't,
Russell's quote is pretty blunt. If someone can't list 3 things they want to do, there's no point in hiring them.
wow. That's a hard line.
It is, but look at the logic. The company promises a supportive, goal-oriented path. If a candidate doesn't even have personal goals, how can the company help them achieve something? How can they align?
It's a filter for internal motivation and clarity of purpose. It ensures the people they hire are already kind of goal-driven, matching the company culture.
Exactly. It ensures that alignment from day one. The internal ambition they look for is meant to fuel the external service excellence they promise.
Okay, so let's tie these threads together. It's a really interesting model taking shape. First, you've got this slightly unusual strategic choice. This huge, sparsely populated territory, Maine, managed remotely using logistics likely honed from that earlier commercial work.
Right. Then layered on top is the external customer focus. the transparency of the mobile showroom, removing friction there, and then this pretty radical service recovery with the COO personally calling on sub-4-star reviews.
And underpinning it all is the internal culture. Hiring people based on their personal goals ensures they have that drive, that reason to engage with the company's promise of growth and flexibility. The transparency they offer customers is kind of mirrored by the transparency they expect from employees about their own ambitions.
It all seems quite interconnected. The internal goals drive the structure, and the personal intervention on reviews drives the external loyalty.
So, what's the big takeaway here for you, the listener? This deep dive shows a new business really leaning into challenges. They didn't shy away from the difficulty of managing a huge, sparse state. Instead, they built systems around it and implemented these very personal, maybe costly seeming policies, like that COO calling customers. But maybe those policies actually drive loyalty and retention in a way that outweighs the immediate cost.
And that brings us to a final thought for you to chew on. Russell chose Maine, defined by that sparse population, those close-knit communities, and he put in this incredibly personal, high-touch recovery policy. So, does operating in that kind of small, interconnected market make radical personal interventions like that less of a nice extra and more of a strategic necessity? Is the high effort of personalized recovery actually cheaper than the damage bad word of mouth could do in that specific type of market?
Something to think about, definitely. How tight-knit is your market, and what level of personal intervention does it demand or perhaps reward?